Good morning. We are on chapter 7 of The Mystical Eye, called Impersonalizing Error. I know everybody would rather hear about the glories and beauties of God, but error and understanding error, I mean really understanding its nothingness, is important. There was a man who wrote, "I am that," and it was a beautiful realization of the I am. And he died from lung cancer. Well, Joel says that there are mystics who have a real experience with God or of God, yet they die from disease because they don't have the proper understanding of error. So this chapter is important. And it begins with, "There have been hundreds of mystics in the history of the world who have been lifted so high in consciousness that they have realized I. And yet many of them were never able to round out a happy, healthy, or successful life. Nor did they ever raise up a body of students capable of revealing to the world the divine harmony that is here for everyone. And why was this? Why, when they had reached such great heights, were they still plagued with the discords of this world? The reason is that they never grasped the importance and significance of the nature of error." So Joel always speaks on three things: the nature of God, the nature of prayer, and the nature of error. Without an understanding of the nature of error, this world is not going to be any different in the next generation than it has been in this one. We all know that there have been many revelations of I, but we also know that these revelations have not saved the world. The revelation of the nature of error, in combination with the revelation of I, can and will save the world. It is true that the nature of error was taught in some degree in the early years of metaphysics, metaphysical teaching and healing, but the real significance of the principle of the nothingness and non-power of disease was not understood. It was believed that mind, which was made synonymous with God, was the power that healed the disease. In short, that God was the power that removed it. However, if you accept the truth that God is omnipotent, you most logically follow that with, well, nothing but God is power. That must mean the powerlessness of anything and everything that is appearing to you as power, whether it is person, thing, circumstance, or condition. You can then look at it objectively and realize how impossible it would be for it to be a power or have a power. If God is omnipresent and omnipotent, the only presence and the only power. And I wrote in the margin here, "Are you still present? You haven't got one. You don't have a personal self. Yes, I know it looks like one. In this case, it may quack like a duck and walk like a duck, but it's not a personal sense. A personal self, rather. Yes, it's a personal sense of a self, but it's not a self. The more aware you become of the nature of God as omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence, the more aware you become of the non-power of this world of effect. You may wonder why the mystics of old did not discover this principle. And the answer is, their minds were conditioned, just as the minds of some of the mystics of today are conditioned. They believe that karma is power, more powerful even than God, or they believe that God uses evil for his purposes. They are so conditioned that they cannot surrender their belief in the power of sin, disease, false appetite, lack, and limitation. That is what makes it difficult to explain this principle to those who have not been inwardly led to such a teaching. Those of you who have been led to it can more readily accept and understand it, because you probably have already experienced the non-power of error in some form or other. Whatever you have experienced, however, is only a beginning. Like millions of persons today, centuries ago, the Hebrews prayed to God to destroy the evils of their world, but they never were destroyed. Since the advent of Christianity, Christians have been praying to God to overcome the evils of their world, and these prayers too have never been successful. Persons of other religions and teachings have been praying to overcome the evils of their world, and yet they have not been overcome, and they never will be overcome until we come to the recognition that we have been wasting time fighting evil. If God could fight evil, it would not be necessary to pray to God to do it. God would be doing it without our asking him. Do not begin telling God what he is not doing. God's wisdom is infinite, not your wisdom, God's. Your wisdom is infinite when you have died sufficiently to your beliefs, your theories, your concepts, and in meditation have opened your consciousness to receive God's wisdom. Only then is your wisdom infinite, because it is not really your wisdom, but God's. In your meditations, eventually, you will come to a deep communion with God, a tabernacling with him. That presence is as real and tangible as anything you have ever known, even more so. And when, through your meditations, you begin to commune with that spirit within you, it will very quickly convince you that the powers of the world are not power, and more especially that the evil powers of the world are not evil. In fact, nothing is evil, except thinking makes it so. Accepting it makes it so. But in and of itself, there is no evil. I saw a picture on my phone this morning of a person that shot at the White House and was shot and killed. And his picture made you want to believe that there was evil. But it's just a picture. There is no evil. There's an appearance of evil, oh yes. But an appearance is not reality. Hey, I like that. I should stick that on a yellow sticky pad and put it on my mirror, huh? Put it on my arm where I can see it every day. Appearance is not reality. You begin to commune with that spirit within you. It will very quickly convince you that the powers of the world are not power. In whatever measure you have experienced a spiritual healing, you have already proved this truth. In other words, if you had a cold, which is supposed to be a power, and if you have had a spiritual healing of it, then you know that what has been proved is that that cold was not the power it claimed to be. If you have had a more serious illness, and through your own or another's spiritual consciousness, you have seen the pain and the symptoms disappear, and harmony restored, all that you have really experienced is the nothingness of that which had been appearing as a disease. Because if it were something, it would still be something. The very fact that it disappeared without surgery or applications of any kind means that it really was not what it claimed to be. All evil, regardless of its name or nature, is the product of a universal hypnotism or malpractice based on the belief in two powers, which Paul described as the carnal mind. Whatever discord touches us is nothing but this mesmeric sense. It is not your belief, it's not my belief, it is a universal belief, which we come under by virtue of our ignorance of truth. Let's pause here for a second. I have a question. What is it that dissolves the claim of evil? Is it your much thinking? Well, you know that's not true. Is it your understanding? No. What dissolves the claim of evil? Awareness, only awareness dissolves it. Awareness of what? Two principles. Awareness of omnipresence by actually feeling it, and awareness of the nothingness of the claim of evil by watching, by bearing witness as it dissolves. Awareness dissolves any claim of evil. Through the activity of the carnal mind, operating universally, we come under this hypnotism from the moment of conception. And if we are living under the law of good and evil, anything can happen. We are subject either to the universal carnal mind, its beliefs and its activities, or we are responding more and more to the spiritual urge. For example, in autumn, with the first cold rains, probably three or four out of 10 people will be sniffling, not because their wrong thinking is victimizing them, but because of the universal hypnotism arising out of the belief in two powers. This hypnotism we must break by realizing that we need not be the subject of world mesmerism, and by understanding that hypnotism, or the carnal mind, is not of God, is not spiritually ordained, has no spiritual law to uphold it. Therefore, it is not power. We do not fight hypnotism or the carnal mind. We do not argue with it. We do not attempt to destroy it or to rise above it. Hypnotism and the carnal mind are merely names which identify good and evil as the essence of all limitation. But as we overcome the belief in the powers of good and evil, we begin to dissolve the source of our discords and inharmonies. The more we live in the realization that we do not have to be subject to the universal hypnotism of the world belief in two powers, the more we free ourselves from that influence and live under grace instead of under the law. When we understand God as omnipotence, we can realize that hypnotism, mesmerism, universal mind, or universal belief in two powers is not power. And in the degree of that realization, do we become free. All right, so let's say you're experiencing lack and limitation, and you want it to go away. So what do you do? Do you turn to God and ask for help? According to this, no. You work with the nature of error. You realize it's not a power. And in the degree of that realization, you become free. The universal belief of the human or carnal mind can act as power only because of our acceptance of it. But in and of itself, there is no power in the suggestion of a self apart from God, or of a presence or power apart from God. The only presence is omnipresence. Even though we may believe we see a ghost, even though we may see sin, disease, or death, still the only presence is omnipresence. God is the only power, regardless of appearances, and God is omniscience, all wisdom. Therefore, we do not have to know anything about the activity of mind or body. All we have to do is to rest in God's omniscience, rest in His infinite wisdom. As we abide in omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence, we can state with conviction, "Ah, yes, there is no presence and there is no power other than God." And this that we call the belief in two powers, the carnal mind, this is not power. This cannot operate in or through man. Why? Why? Because man is not a human. Man is manifestation of the divine. All evil is impersonal. There is no person in whom, on whom, or through whom it can operate. Whether it is a claim of weather, disease, lack, or limitation, whatever the name or nature of the evil, it is impersonal. It does not have its rise in you, in me, or in any person, place, thing, or condition. The root of all evil is the carnal mind, or belief in two powers, and that belief that there is power in disease, lack, or sin is the hypnotism causing all the discord in the world. To the degree we realize that in all this world there exists no such thing as good or evil as an entity, are we without a carnal mind. Therefore, even to think or say that something, person, or condition is good is to permit the carnal mind to control us. There is only one being, one essence, one power. And that is consciousness, which is God. Consciousness is neither good nor evil. It just is. I used to love to get a window seat when I was flying somewhere. I could look out and see the Pacific Ocean, and I could see that it just is. It wasn't good, it wasn't evil. It just is. And that helped. All right. For consciousness to be good or evil, it would have to have an opposite, and it would have to have degrees. There are no opposites in God. There are no degrees in God. God is infinite. God is omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. That leaves no room for opposites, for opposition, limitation, or finiteness. As we permit limitation and finiteness to operate in our consciousness, we bring the carnal mind into our experience. The carnal mind is not overcome by fighting it. It's overcome by recognizing that it is made up of the belief in good and evil. This does not mean that in our everyday human experience we do not take cognizance of good and evil. Naturally, we recognize that a condition of health is better expression in our experience than one of disease. And one of the fruits of spiritual living is a greater sense of health than we may now be enjoying. So while it is true humanly, we seem compelled to acknowledge the limitations of good and evil. We must recognize consciousness does not embody within itself quantities or qualities of good or evil or limitation. As we engage in the routine activities of the day, we inwardly maintain our spiritual awareness of the I as individual consciousness, and acknowledge that whatever appears in our experience as sin, disease, death, or limitation is carnal mind, the arm of flesh, no mind. We do not deny that there are poor drivers on the road. As far as the human picture is concerned, the highways are filled with good and evil persons. But having recognized that, we take our spiritual stand. Yes, that is the appearance due to the belief in good and evil, carnal mind. But it is not power. It is not God ordained, God maintained, or God sustained. It is but the arm of flesh. Throughout our human experience, we cannot avoid being aware of sin, disease, and poverty in the world. Conditions that will be in the world as long as there is a human race that has not become emancipated. As long as there is a world made up of the belief in good and evil, these pictures will always be here for us to see. Sickness all around, death, insanity, and all those things that go to make up the carnal mind. What determines the harmony of our experience is our reaction to these. Not hiding our heads in the sand and claiming or declaring they do not exist, but recognizing, yes, they are the arm of flesh. They do have temporal power. They are power to a world that believes in good and evil, but not to me. I know that there is but one power. And then you have to rest in that awareness. At the beginning of our spiritual journey, we are merely coming out of the mortal sense of evil into a better sense of human life, one that is healthier, wealthier, or happier. But that's not the ultimate of life. The ultimate of life is spiritual realization, which eventually takes us out of evil and good sense of human life. So it lifts you out of both. Well, you say, can I not have good in my life? Can I not enjoy certain things? I love a good homemade cherry pie when it comes out and it's still a little warm. Comes out of the oven. You slap a little vanilla ice cream on there and oh my God. However, there's no such thing as good. Thinking makes it so. As you witness the evils of this world, as they turn up in your experience, your families, neighbors, or your nations, be sure in your meditation that you cover the two major principles of the infinite way. First, open the door of your consciousness and admit the I. Acknowledge. Be not afraid. I am with you. Be not afraid of those out there. I am he, I am here, and I am there. Be not afraid. I in the midst of you am mighty. I am life eternal. I am the way. Just rely on me. Fear no danger, for there is no power external to you. I in the midst of you am infinite power, the all power, the only power. Live by grace. Since I am your meat, your wine, your water, I can give you water, and if you drink of it, you will never thirst again. I have meat the world knows not of. I am the resurrection. I am the way. I am the way to your peace. I am the way to your abundance. I am the way to your safety. I am the rock. I am a fortress. I am a high tower. Abide in me. Let me abide in you. And no evil shall come nigh thy dwelling place. No weapons that are formed against thee shall prosper. Why? They are shadows. They are not realities. They are not powers. I, in the midst of you, am omnipotence, the only power. These arrows, these poison darts, these germs, these bullets, these bombs, they are all shadows. They are beliefs in a power apart from me. They are a universal belief in two powers. Believe in me as omnipotence. You are never in mysticism until you have opened your consciousness and accepted the truth that I in the midst of you am he. Christ was incarnated in you. And the Annunciation means the conception of the Christ in you. Your recognition of this truth is the birth of the Christ in you. But when you accept this, do not forget, it's not complete until you have followed up the omnipotence of I, which is the first principle of the infinite way, with the second principle, which is the non-power of that which is appearing as the world of effect. So there's two main principles. Principle one, the omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience of I. Principle number two, there's no power in the world of effect. In your experience, you will be dealing with persons of different states of consciousness and varying degrees of good and evil. And even if they do not touch you personally, you will be cognizant of evil in persons active in national or international affairs. That is not enough. I can assure you, to bear witness to the fact that the Christ is in them, you must take the second step as well, and recognize that the carnal mind is not power. Only this completes your prayer or your meditation. Until you have acknowledged, I in the midst of me is God. I in the midst of you is God. and the carnal mind, the universal belief in two powers, is non-power. Then, and then alone, you have completed your demonstration. Do not try to destroy evil in a person, but realize the universal nature of the carnal mind, and then nothingize it. This can be done because God never created a carnal mind. God never created two powers. God never created evil. And therefore, as you impersonalize and nothingize, you bring your prayer, treatment, or realization to a completion. Then you can rest and be certain that you have really handled the situation intelligently and spiritually, because you have done honor to God in acknowledging omnipotence. You have done honor to God in acknowledging omnipresence, the presence of God within you, the very eye of your being. And you have thereby practically wiped out the devil in the realization that the carnal mind, the universal belief in two powers, has no law of God to maintain it. The evil that comes nigh your dwelling place always personalizes itself. It comes as sin, temptation, false appetite in you or in some other person. It always personalizes itself in him, her, or you. Watch it, and you will notice. You never think about alcoholism. You think about the alcoholic. You never think about drug addiction. You think about the drug addict. You never think about the universal carnal mind. You think about the evil man in prison. Because evil always comes in a personalized form. It came to Jesus in the form of a devil. It always personalizes itself. But when Jesus turned on the devil, there was no devil there. It was just a temptation in his mind. And it had to be met there and in his mind. So, there is no evil person confronting you. There is no evil condition confronting you. This is a personalization of the impersonal carnal mind. Not your belief, not mine, but the universal belief in two powers. As you recognize this and impersonalize it, the evil falls away from the person. Whether it is a sin, a disease, false appetite, whatever it may be, it falls away from him, sometimes very quickly, sometimes slowly, depending upon his degree of receptivity. Just see how powerful you are. Your awareness can change the world. Your awareness can change a nation. Your awareness can change the president. Your awareness can change the weather. Now, I've experienced that, so I know that it's true. All right. When you learn to impersonalize evil, you do not have to call upon a God power. you can accept God as omnipotence, but only if you can see so-called evil appearances as Maya or illusion, and then not try to get God to do something to them. When you can do this, you are in spiritual wisdom. Then you can say to the blind man, "Open thine eyes." The moment you try to get a God power to do something for the blind, however, you have lost the demonstration. If you can look at the impotent man and say, "Rise, take up thy bed and walk," you can help him. But when you turn to God to do something for him, you are in the same dream that he is in. The spiritually illumined know there is no need to call on God for anything, because God is always about his business. He does not have to be reminded, directed, or pleaded with. If you really want to honor God, know that God is always being God. God is always maintaining and sustaining his spiritual universe. Then, in your release of God, you realize, what power is there apart from God? What presence is there apart from God? I must not be deceived by these appearances. Then you see rightness reveal itself. No God power is used. God power was there in the beginning. But the recognition of omnipotence and omniscience and omnipresence and the unreal nature of appearances brings it into infinite manifestation. So what is needed is the awareness of the two principles. God is omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience, and the error as non-power. Those two, realized deep within, will completely remake your world, your universe. All right. Awake out of inertia into being. It is in our lap. It is within our power to determine whether or not we value our freedom enough to break through the mental inertia that would keep us from consciously realizing truth 2, 3 or more times a day. Every one of us has a spiritual destiny. Then what keeps us from experiencing it? The belief in two powers, good and evil, which has become so crystallized in human consciousness as to form a malpractice or hypnotism that keeps us under the law instead of under grace. Once we know the truth that every form of discord in our life is a form of hypnotism, and to the extent that we can accept God being, we release ourselves from sin, fear, and the diseases of this world. Our mind is not then reaching out to God, nor is it seeking good. We are completely released from seeking anything. God is. I am. And we rest in that. My life and God's life are joined. It is the one life My mind and God's mind are the one mind. Nothing can separate us or divide us. Not even life or death can separate me from the life of God, the love of God, and the abundance of God. For God is being now. I cannot make it so. Not even God can make it so. It has been so from the beginning. What God has joined together, no man, no circumstance, no condition can put asunder. And any belief that I have heretofore accepted as a presence or a power apart from the I that I am, I consciously reject because of omnipotence and omnipresence. Impersonalize God. Impersonalize evil. Know the nature of I as universal being, universal life. Do not allow the veil that personalizes God to be put back on. Make no image of God. Do not make a wood carving, do not make an ivory carving, or a gold carving. Do not make even a mental image of God. Then you will not be personalizing God. And if you're not personalizing God, you're not placing the veil on. The minute you have an image of God in your thought, you are personalizing. And you are expecting that concept to be God. And a concept cannot be God. Only I can be God. And you cannot have a mental image of I. That is the one word that defies description. Try as you will, you cannot make a mental image of I. Once this truth has been unveiled for you, it will never be veiled for you again. You will never be able to go back to making concepts of God or looking to God for God to do something to the nothingness and non-power of this world of effect. Always that smile will come to your lips and the word I will come and you will be at peace. You will be at rest. Then, in quietness and confidence, you can be a beholder of God in action. You do not impel it. You do not empower it. You do not send it forth. In quietness and confidence, you become a beholder, watching it at work. Yes, he says, live life as a beholder. How many times has he told us that? And probably when we were new, we were thinking that some mysterious God would just come through and we could watch it. And yet nothing happens. So we dig a little deeper and we find out, oh, we have to have a realization of omnipresence. We have to realize it, make it real. And then we go along, we stumble. Now what? We return and we find out, oh, there's a second principle, the non-power of effect. Now, in my case of a warm cherry pie with vanilla ice cream, thinking that's good does not make it so. Suppose you serve that up to someone that's allergic to cherries. Is that good? No. Is it evil? No, it's just cherries. What makes it good is my belief that it tastes good. What makes it evil is your belief that you're allergic. It's not the cherries, it's the belief in two powers. How do you carry this out into practice? You start your day with a meditation. And in that meditation, you realize omnipresence. Try to get the feel of it, the weight of it. Omnipresence. And then move on to the second principle. All of these conditions that are facing me are not power. God is the only power. Well, then what is moving these? What is pressing these? What is animating these conditions? And that would be the belief in good and evil. This is evil, and I need to overcome it to find the good. No, that's not true. That's a mistake. A sin. Missing the mark. Look, you and I, we want to find omnipresence. We want to realize it. And we do that in the silence that we find within. In that silence, we remember, omnipresence. God is present everywhere. God is present every when. God is present forever. And so, should I pass on and return, God will be just as much present as He is now. When I leave here, God will be just as much present there as here, because it's all within my consciousness, my conscious awareness. And my conscious awareness of omnipresence makes it so to me. Okay. That brings us to the end of this talk, this chapter. And next week we'll take up I Speaks. Thank you for bringing this forth. Thank you for listening. You know, it's your consciousness that draws this out of my consciousness, because it's one consciousness. Okay. Let's be still for a moment and see if there's anything else. Blessings, and may you realize omnipresence and the non-power of anything appearing as a different presence. God bless. Until we meet again.